The United States has passed a law reforming its finance industry, and it's a big deal. It's the biggest change since the 1930s. It took a year of bipartisan wrangling to finalise the 2,300 pages of the new law, and it covers everything from derivatives to consumer financial products to oversized banks. The law creates the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, an independent agency designed to police credit extended to consumers through means such as mortgages, student loans, and credit cards. But with all the horse trading, you won't be surprised to hear some of the bill's original provisions were weakened, including those related to car loans. To find out why Washington listened to America's auto dealers and what this might mean for the American consumer and the economy as a whole, we're joined now by on Saturday Extra by Raj Date. Raj is the chairman and executive director of the Cambridge Winter Center for Financial Institutions Policy and co-author of a recent study on auto finance in the US. Raj, welcome to Radio National.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How big a financial business are auto loans in the US?
The auto finance business in the US is a surprisingly big business. The business is about the same size, even a little bit bigger than the consumer credit card business, something like $850 billion in loans outstanding at any given time.
That's astonishing. And I suppose nearly everybody has to use that business if they're buying a car.
Yes. If you think about the average price of a new car in the U.S. is something like $20,000 or $22,000, well, the median household income in the U.S. isn't much more than maybe twice that. So the fact of the matter is that if you feel like you need to have access to an automobile, you need access to automobile financing. And the sad fact is, and even though it's difficult sometimes for people within the big metropolitan centers like New York or Washington, D.C. to remember this, in most parts of the U.S., if you don't have a car, you don't really have a chance to get to work. So really people do need auto loans.
What is disconcerting about this is that house prices, although it doesn't feel like it at the moment in America, will go up again. But cars lose value as soon as they're driven off the lot.
That's right, which makes some of the financial flexibility associated with home finance not really available in the case of auto finance. It's not as though if I'm an auto dealer and I put you into a not especially attractive auto loan if you're a customer, it's not as though you can turn around very easily 2 months later and refinance that loan. By that point, you are pretty dramatically what we call upside down. That is to say, the value of the car quite frequently is actually less than the amount that you owe.
All right. Well, to help us understand how this industry works, the auto finance market, as I understand it, consists of two distribution channels, the direct and the indirect.
That's right. The direct channel is basically consumers going directly to a lender. And in the United States, really that means either small banks or credit unions. And that's the way really the business would have existed 100 years ago for any large ticket purchase. And 50 years ago in the auto finance market. If consumers needed a loan, they would go to their bank or to their credit union, and they would get a loan based on their own creditworthiness and the kind of car that they were trying to buy. But that's really today the smaller part of the business. That's about 20% of the business today in the U.S. The other 80% of the business are loans that are arranged by auto dealers. The actual car salesmen who are selling you the car will customarily also offer the service of putting you into loans that are provided by third-party lenders.
Now, in Australia, if you're buying a car, a new car or a second-hand car from a dealer, it is way better for you if you already have the money. But if you don't already have the money, it's better if you get the money from, say, a bank or a credit union.
That's certainly true in the U.S. as well. But there are two things that really work against consumers in that way. The first thing that works against U.S. consumers is that the ambient level of financial literacy in the U.S. is rather dramatically lower than it probably should be. And that means that despite the repeated admonitions of consumer advocates for the better part of decades, the fundamental education is not getting through. That is to say, people just seem not to be able to understand that there is a real difference between having a loan in hand from your bank when you go to shop for a car and having to rely on the dealer to arrange your financing. So that's one major problem, and it's one that's frankly very difficult to solve. The second major problem is that the dealer is in a very good position in order to sell you a loan. The need for financing is much more real. It's much more tangible when you actually see the car in front of you that you want to buy. And car salesmen are, for whatever their faults, extraordinarily good salesmen. And so they are able to pitch their particular financing wares at a moment and with a skill set that's rather different than you're going to find at most small banks in the U.S.
On Saturday Extra on Radio National, Richard Ady here sitting in for Geraldine Doogue. My guest is Raj Datta. He's the chairman and executive director of the Cambridge Winter Centre for Financial Institutions Policy, and he's co-author of a recent study on auto finance in the U.S. Now, if we go back to the law, Raj, although he personally fought against this, President Obama's financial reform bill exempts the auto dealers from oversight from the new Consumer Finance Protection Bureau. What arguments were made by the lobbyists to justify this?
You know, there were many fights, as you might imagine. As you pointed out, it's a 2,300-page piece of legislation. So as you might imagine, there were many, many fights that were pitted as between various interests as this legislation got argued and hashed through in both houses of Congress. And this was one of those fights. But unlike most of the fights, there was no particularly grounded, reasoned set of arguments in favor of the car salesmen on this particular debate. After all, car salesmen are the single biggest channel in this very large financing market in the U.S., and it is a sector that is known for having consumer abuses. So to the extent that you're going to have a consumer protection agency for financial products, this would seem an area that would be especially susceptible to that need. But as it turns out, they didn't need a particularly reasoned or grounded set of arguments because their political power is such that it did not take much to win the day.
How come they've got so much political power?
Well, there are 535 members of the combined House and Senate in the U.S., and for those 435 members of the House of Representatives, each and every one of those 435 districts has one or more car salesmen in it. And in general, auto dealers tend to be relatively important members of communities. They tend to give rather prodigiously to campaigns, and they tend to employ a reasonable number of people in each district. So while it's relatively easy for someone like me, who is an observer from my perch on Wall Street looking, you know, safely ensconced in New York City, to talk about the right substantive answer, it's rather more difficult if you're a member of the House of Representatives who has to run for re-election every 2 years to ignore a very powerful special interest group.
And although $850 billion is a huge amount of money, of course, what we're talking about is thousands and thousands of fairly small businesses, all of whom can say, well, look, I'm not a big bank, I'm not Wall Street, I'm on Main Street America.
That is one of the bits of rhetoric that I think really did work to the advantage of the auto dealers in this debate. It was a bit of a judo move where one said, well, the person you should really be upset at is the big banks or the big Wall Street firms, and say what you will about auto dealers, that's not what they are. What got lost, though, is the fact that most of loans that are originated by auto dealers, it's not as though auto dealers hold on to those loans, they more often than not get sold through to Wall Street and then get securitized into the broader capital markets. So this distancing of the car dealers from Wall Street, while an interesting rhetorical flourish, in fact has very little substance behind it.
So it's a massive back channel into Wall Street itself.
Yeah, it's the single largest channel for Wall Street in the auto finance business, and Wall Street is the single largest channel for dollars for auto dealers. It's a symbiotic relationship, and one that makes a lot of sense. I mean, after all, auto dealers' main competition in the auto finance market are small banks, but small banks have their own access to funding. They're banks, whereas auto dealers really rely on Wall Street.
So given how much money we're talking about, $850 billion, I have to keep saying that to remind myself it's so vast, how serious a blow is this exemption to the new Consumer Finance Protection Bureau?
Well, it is a significant blow at the outset because it fundamentally means that an important facet of consumer finance for a great many middle-income and lower Americans is simply out of bounds. And that is really unfortunate, and it's a real signal, I think, about the ultimate legislative threat to the efficacy of consumer protection more broadly. Now, that said, there are still things that a new bureau might be able to do. After all, one just has to follow the money. And there are certainly things that all these loans that are originated by auto dealers, after all, have to get funded in the capital markets. They have to get funded one way or another. So there are certainly choke points along the business system where one could exert a little bit of discipline. But the fact of the matter is the best place to exert discipline in any consumer business is at the consumer-facing point itself, and those auto dealers are affirmatively off-limits.
All right, Raj. Well, we're roughly 2 years into the great global financial crisis, and Obama's seeking to restore public confidence in his economic leadership as unemployment figures are at almost double digits. How helpful will this reform be, do you think, even in its slightly watered-down form, in preventing another meltdown?
Well, any piece of legislation this broad certainly has strengths and weaknesses, but I think the good news is that there are many more strengths than there are weaknesses in this particular reform package. I think the existence, despite the auto finance issue that we were just talking about, I think the existence of a Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is an important addition. I think that the rationalization of some of the bank regulatory bodies in the U.S., it previously was a hopelessly balkanized set of regulatory agencies that often worked at cross purposes. It is slightly less balkanized now, so I suppose that is good news. And there is a pretty clear path from the legislation to be able to provide for higher capital requirements for banks, which net-net certainly make the system more resilient to cyclical downdraft. So all of that is good news.
It's going to be interesting to watch, Raj. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Raj Date is the Chairman and Executive Director of the Cambridge Winter Centre for Financial Institutions Policy and co-author of a recent study on auto finance in the US. And we'll put a link to that report on the Saturday Extra webpage, which you'll find at abc.net.au/rn/SaturdayExtra.